move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, new league year, baby. We have tons to get to. New signings, how they fit, the vision around all of that, and much, much more. Plus, a look across the NFL landscape and what could be next for your Miami Dolphins. From the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is the Drive Time Podcast. We've got no time to waste today. Let's go ahead and get right to it. And these are all per reports from Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, and the like, because as you guys know, these signings are not officially announced until we, the team, put them out as official announcements. Because we wanted to get you guys a podcast here right at the new league year, let's go ahead and talk about what has been reported to have transpired down here in South Florida and across the National Football League. Linebacker Jordan Brooks, formerly of the Seattle Seahawks, reportedly on a 3-year, roughly $8 to $9 million per season per reports. Center Aaron Brewer, 3 years, reportedly around $7 million per year for him. Anthony Walker, one for 1.2. The linebacker formerly of the Colts and Browns. And Jonnu Smith, you guys know about him. He was already, he's already here. He signed, sealed, delivered. And then Shaq Barrett, also a guy that will not impact your comp formula because he too was a player released by his previous team. The reported numbers on that, I believe, were 1 for 9. So let's go ahead and just start with some of the players here. I'll tell you guys about how the vision and how this kind of has come together and go off of my previous podcast where I talked about how this could be what happens. More players in turn for less, you know, higher paid players as you look to get deeper and give yourself a better chance to sustain attrition as the year goes along while hopefully adding some compensatory picks down the road as the draft picks, as you see with the prices of all these free agent contracts in the top tiers in the NFL right now, draft picks continue to increase in value. So let's go through all this here, starting with Jordan Brooks. Man, and real quick, we're going to try to get all these guys in studio here. We'll do a deeper dive on their film when they are here in studio. So the plan is to have each guy have their own podcast, interview, media discussions, and then my full breakdown watching the tape because I don't have enough time to get through all this tape right now with you guys for all these players. I want to make sure it's as thorough as possible. So that is coming down the pike. Jordan Brooks, linebacker. First notes watching his preliminary tape, explosive, instinctual linebacker with tremendous vertical speed to match tight ends, backs, and even slots in coverage. Middle of the field eraser with exceptional range to deter quarterbacks from attacking those windows that tend to create the biggest splash plays in the field. You hit your timing routes in the middle of the field, those can be one broken tackle and out the gate, as we well know down here in South Florida with all the weaponry Tua has at his disposal. He did tear his ACL, Jordan Brooks did, in December of 2022, but played the entire 2023 season from opening day and has missed just 4 games in his 4-year career. This one, to me, tops the list in terms of impact, cost, the player, the fit, the entire ensemble of Jordan Brooks. This, I think, is the gem of your free agent class. I think you can see the linebacker moves from day one of the legal tampering period and get an understanding for how this defense wants to operate. We heard defensive coordinator coach Anthony Weaver talk about the ability to move your most versatile pieces around the football field, your Javon Hollins, your Jalen Ramseys. And I've personally been on this crusade about Miami's need to get one of these predator build type of linebackers, long, fast, physical, three down, can get vertical, who can play downhill, but has that range going backwards to impact those deep hook throws, to impact seam shots, to tight ends, as we know that this conference, this division, now especially with Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid back in Buffalo, you're going to have that. And who knows how valuable that is more than a Mike McDaniel, than a Kyle Shanahan, than a Sean McVay, right? They've seen these defenses take away that throw from them, from the teams that, for Shanahan, he takes it away from other teams with Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. Jordan Brooks also arrives with considerable thump and has called the Seattle defense for the last 2 years. So he's smart. He's a captain on that defense. I love that he had proximity to Bobby Wagner, and he's talked about how that rubbed off on him in his career. But also, You know, Joe Barry in Green Bay had linebackers like this, you know, more inclined to be included, I think, in the coverage aspect of the position and really play those drop seven, drop eight type of coverages with the occasional blitz that becomes more of a situational thing because these guys can do it, but you're not always asking them to do it. But structurally, I think you give your safeties more umbrella looks and free up more space in the middle of the field and take away more of the perimeter and deep stuff because of the range of one Jordan Brooks and alongside David Long, who can do some of that as well. But I think this takes a lot of stress, a lot of pressure off David Long. I didn't think the previous linebacker core had anybody anywhere close to what Jordan Brooks is in a coverage standpoint. And for David Long, hey, go play the curl flat, man. That's where you're fantastic, playing downhill side to side. Let's let Jordan Brooks run those deep verticals, those deep hooks. And I just think that with the ability to go on the perimeter, and we'll find out what happens at the cornerback position, but you know, Ramsey can now kind of lock down one side, right, and free up more space in the middle. Maybe that's Cam Smith doing it as well. Maybe it's Kader Kohu. You have more options for your flexible pieces on that back end. We also heard Coach Weaver talk about picking your spots with those blitz, but how you have to do it. Like, you can't just not do it. You have to do it sometimes, but you have to be intentional. You have to mix it up in addition to presenting different pre-snap looks, which we didn't do last year with this defense. And I think Brooks helps with all of that. His pass rush rate is almost the same every single year. Roughly 10% of his coverage snaps, he'll go on a blitz. And his pressure rate is always right around 25%. It's not unlike Jerome Baker, who just had that quick first step and downhill pursuit angles to exploit those freed up pass rush lanes. Like, think about Zach Sealer and his stunts and the picks that he sets and just make that clock a little bit faster on the opposing quarterback. Brooks is listed at 6'1", 240. The counting stats are impressive. 513 tackles over four seasons, 111 last year off that ACL injury. He was a part of five fumble production plays, two forced, three recoveries, 16 passes defense, and a pick over 4 years. The PFF coverage numbers don't like him, but I'm telling you, he was asked to do way more than your average Mike linebacker. He's in that Tremaine Edmonds category of, hey, we need you to go 20 yards downfield in the hook, but also if they run to the weak side C gap, you have to get over there too. So best of luck, buddy. That cover three in Seattle cannot be ran without a quarterback of the defense like Jordan Brooks. They weren't productive last year, but the last couple of years prior to that, they were good, and a lot of that had to do with Jordan Brooks in the middle of the defense, especially the year they lost Bobby Wagner. And the stops numbers are crazy, too. Like, he loves getting downhill. 42 last year, but his last full, healthy, fresh season without ACL injuries, 61 stops. That was 8th in the National Football League. And again, 42, 9 months off an ACL, also very impressive. I love this signing, guys. I'm also a big fan of new reported signing center Aaron Brewer, formerly of the Tennessee Titans, per Schefter, per Rap Sheet, per all the guys. Quite literally the most explosive interior offensive lineman in the National Football League, with outrageous effort and speed to get out on the perimeter and hit critical blocks, turning 10-yard gains into 70-yard touchdowns. He is undersized for the position. He'll go about 295 unless they ask him to gain some weight here, and the pressure allowed numbers were pretty high the last couple of years, but there is some required context that goes into that. He can execute more blocks in the running game than just about any center out there, and that's a critical element of Mike McDaniel's offense. We talked about Jackson Powers Johnson as a potential fit as a prospect on the interior and that added size, but I think that Brewer's signing tells you McDaniel wants elite athletic ability in that position, and you won't find anybody more so than Aaron Brewer. And his tape is fun, man. It's hard to have fun watching O-line tape, in my opinion. You guys, again, back to JPJ in the Who's Wingfield watching draft segs back in January, just live reacting to him getting out in space and making these crushing blocks on the perimeter 50 yards down the field. That's Aaron Brewer. He gets off the ball faster than anybody I've ever watched, literally. He's the quickest center off the snap I've ever watched. And the overplay that can create, because you have to get out of the blocks to not let him cut you off and wall you off and maul and wall, as I saw the new phrase coined there by Jordan Rodriguez and picked up by Daniel Jeremiah. Maul and wall guys off, create lanes. And that also plays in our ability to use the misdirection, to get guys' eyes out of place. You have to have such sharp eye discipline playing this Dolphins offense, and Brewer takes it to another level because of that quickness. You can run counter off of that and exploit the false steps, exploit the overplay. Like, that's the Dolphins offense. It's tough to imagine a better fit than what Aaron Brewer is. And he's also super savvy, man. Like, he'll fire off the football before the one technique and kind of chip and hold him at bay with that arm bar and allow his outflanked guard to catch up. He's so good at assisting his teammates. And he's talked about this in interviews on whatever.com. I Googled it. I don't remember where it was. But talked about his ability to, like, at the pivot position, you're doing more assisting than head-up contact, and his ability to kind of chip and get himself into these nooks and crannies at that size and then climb up to the second level, he alluded to the fact that it's easier to get up to that level when you are a little bit more slight. I think that he understands the position that way in a more natural way than what Connor Williams did. Like, he sees how that linebacker approaching the play and knows which block to go hit based upon his alignment, his assignment, all that stuff. And you're going to see long Devon Achane runs this year, where you watch 28 showing his taillights to the defense and then 55 making a critical block right in front of him that gets circulated all throughout Dolphins Twitter on Monday. And we're talking about what a great play that was by Aaron Brewer. Trust me on that. Pull up any of the expert offensive line analysts out there. Brandon Thorne, to me, doesn't miss. He's like perfect at what he does. He's a huge fan. Duke Mannyweather, which is a guy that Teron Armstead works with in the offseason, said the exact same thing. He mentions that when left static and pass pro, that is when your 340-pound nose tackles can use their power and lean on him. 33 pressures last year, a 96.7 pass block efficiency. That's not a good number for a center, but if you kind of go back and watch the tape and see when he was left on an island and not really, you know, part of a five-man protection scheme and was more of an individual blocker in that aspect, that's when he got in trouble. To me, that's on coaching. I don't think Butch Berry will put him in that position at all. But when he's moving and sliding to a side, all these rotating pockets and moving pockets and different looks to kind of sell the run and the play action game, he can be such a valuable part of your run game concept, but also your pass blocking concept when you execute it that way. And again, that's what our offense does, man. They use the run game, they use motion, they use moving parts to create indecision in the pass rush game, and Brewer's athletic ability accentuates all of that. But also, between Connor and Liam at center exclusively, we also allowed 32 pressures last year, one less than what Aaron Brewer did, and if it wasn't, you know, Connor for the chunk of 11 games, I'm sure it's a lot higher. So you've drastically improved your ability to run your offense, your run game, with a similar level of pass protection quality, though I'd argue, you know, better usage could improve that with Brewer specifically as well. Now, again, at 295, it's tough to get displacement and short yardage and goal line, so that's a bit of a concern for me. But also, like, this offense found a way to 27 rushing touchdowns last year with an undersized center in Connor Williams. So I trust the decision makers. This is a spot where you see where Alex Mack went to every stop of Kyle Shanahan, right? And Mike McDaniel, for that matter. I trust McDaniel with a center about as much as any other position on the football field. Linebacker Anthony Walker. I remember the conversation around him as a potential first-round pick after his junior season. He goes back for his senior year and winds up a fifth-round pick. It's brutal the way that happens sometimes coming out of Northwestern. He wasn't the super fluid mover some guys are, like Jordan Brooks is, for instance, but damn it, he plays with a certain tempo and a certain temperament and a certain physicality. Like, I look at him as your, like, new Alandon Roberts type of player. As my friend Seth would say, he has some real ish to him, so to speak. He flat out bangs, man. He's missed some games the last couple of years, but prior to that, he was a consistent 700 to 800 snap player. I'm not sure what the role will be here, because we do have the two backers that I think are really good players and can play upwards of 800 reps each. But now you've got depth, better coverage ability, and multiple gap fitters in the running game for your short yardage, for your base down packages. And just the overall way these guys shift the mentality of the middle of the Dolphins defense to me, with Long last year, which a big addition, and now Walker and Jordan Brooks, like that quite a lot, that position group. Joe Barry, Anthony Weaver showing you what they prioritize with the range, fluidity, flexibility, and how it can increase production for the other positions on your defense, your front and your back end, when you have strong play up the middle. He had a two-year run. Anthony Walker did a 53 and 55 run stops, then followed up with 37 and 35 when he went from Cleveland to Indianapolis and had a little bit of injuries those 2 years. So those are your top three guys. And we also got news on Tuesday of a potential Shaq Barrett signing, reports per Adam Schefter, a savvy veteran who's been praised for his leadership, his locker room presence, a ton of NFL pelts on the wall, and still plenty of juice into his 30s. He's an exceptional run defender, and he still is that. I talk all the time about going and getting your contact. He initiates contact on those split flow looks and can reset the line of scrimmage and force the back to change tracks. And if they do that in this league, you're going to get caught from behind by Jalen Phillips on the backside C gap. He's a great team run defender, and how he knows where he needs to be, where to keep his eye discipline to stay on his rush track, to stay in his gap against the running game. He's not the same springy rusher that he was when he posted 37 and a half sacks in 3 years. And in the 24 games he's played since then, he has 7.5 sacks. So if that's your third rusher and you're playing, you know, 17 games, that's what, a sack every third game that he posted there. So we're talking about, I don't know, math. That's like over 5 sacks in the season. That's your third rusher. That's what Van Ginkel was last year. So there you go. The production is literally always there. First off, for this guy, another player who was released, so no compensatory pick impact. This also feels like Weaver's new Clowney, kind of, an early 30s pass rusher, which, by the way, again, look at the production of guys in their recent years in their early 30s. 31's kind of the new 28 at edge rusher. But you know, a few things here. This guy understands all things pass rush. He knows how to attack a tackle. He can give you mid-game adjustments about, hey, he's doing this, attack him with this move that you have. How to adjust his own game plan, how to enact counter moves. Something I think he can pass on to a guy like Jalen Phillips, who is a sponge for new information and new knowledge about football. He's also been in multiple defenses, been an overhang backer, a true rusher, a hand in the dirt end. You can do several things and run multiple fronts with Shaq Barrett. He's a nice fit to be your guy that, you know, you're kind of in this tricky spot with the two Pro Bowl caliber players who has a torn Achilles in November, a torn ACL in December, and Phillips and Chubb. So you need someone who can start right away. I think it's probably Shaq Barrett. And then also be able to phase in as your third rusher down the stretch. And damn it, if Shaq Barrett is not the best option for all of that. Love that signing. I love the next one too, because for a reported 1 year, $2 million contract, the Dolphins finally connect with a guy that has wanted to be here for a long time per his Instagram, his Twitter, his comments, and Jordan Poyer, who will join the Miami Dolphins and team up with Javon Holland on the back end to give you a dynamic but also very interchangeable safety duo back there. And I doubt the Dolphins will be done at that position, because as we know, this defense that Anthony Weaver, you know, was part of with the Baltimore Ravens and what he talked about wanting to run here requires plenty of big nickel packages. That's three safeties or dime defenses, whatever it might look like, you're going to have three safeties on the field a heck of a lot. So Javon Holland's one of those guys. Jordan Poyer, one of those guys. We know Elijah Campbell is back. We'll find out who is the other guy that joins that room with him on the back end. Might it be Deshaun Elliott coming back? We will find out here soon, I'm sure. But Jordan Poyer, man, he's the kind of football player that almost seems to be a bit of a dying breed a little bit. I mean, former seventh-round draft pick who bounced around a little bit before finding his way to the Cincinnati Bengals and having a big role for that team. He goes off to Buffalo, and I'm reading some stuff here from a Bills podcast Twitter thread that he put together, who said, why do we love Jordan Poyer? After picking off Lamar Jackson twice to seal a win over Baltimore, he has the rib injury in that game that did not clear him for a flight, so he drove in a car from Buffalo to KC to play in the AFC Championship game a couple years back. And we know that Coach McDaniel has been upfront about his issues with alcohol in the past. He had something similar where he has been very upfront and become a source of strength and encouragement for those going through the same struggle there, answering DMs of fans and offering support and the like. Really good character in that way. Great guy for your locker room. They also say when the Bills had major injuries on defense, he also stepped in as a nickel linebacker to help his team survive in a season in pass coverage. That's what I wanted to talk about there, was the fit in the defense and how you can kind of have these rotating roles in your back seven from linebacker, safety, cornerback, slot. All those positions can find a way to be interchangeable. And this guy, you can put him anywhere on a football field, and I think he'll know his job, he'll know his task, he'll know how the routes can impact where he wanna be, where his landmarks are, how his teammates can help and assist him. He's gonna come in here, and maybe he's a half a step slower than he was earlier in his career, but he's gonna come in here and he's gonna get everything buttoned up on that back end. He's kind of like an additional coach on the football field. I think it's the biggest value of this addition for the Dolphins here on the back end. So Jordan Poyer in town now to help the Dolphins fix even another need that was, you know, part of the panic we talked about all on Monday across Twitter that the Dolphins had so many needs. Well, another one here checked off the list with Jordan Poyer on a one-year, $2 million deal per reports from Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, Cam Wolf, all the like. Good signing. Tight end Jonnu Smith did him last week. I believe it was the Wednesday or Friday episode. I can't remember. Go back and check it out. We also covered Nick Needham and Elijah Campbell on the Monday podcast, but one more re-signing came in under the wire since we published, and it's Rob Jones. This one's interesting to me for the fact that, first, I'm stoked because Rob is about the most fun-loving guy you could ever meet, and I'll never forget his work on the final drive of what has become maybe my favorite Dolphins game ever, the Christmas Eve win over Dallas. How high, that was the best Christmas, like opening gifts, knowing we had that win in the back pocket. But he had some critical gap-clearing blocks on that final drive for the big Jeff Wilson first down runs. Remember that? But I also thought that Rob was a little more suited for man gap schemes where he could knock heads straight on and overpower dudes. But also, if there wasn't a lot of tape getting in space of him, you know, using his maximizing what he has from an athletic standpoint, making some plays that way. And the fact that the team wanted him back tells me there's even more meat on the bone. Plus, it keeps you flexible and able to run some more man gap like we saw on that Dallas drive, for instance. And that was a little more common down the stretch, as it was for the 49ers this year and the Rams this year. These wide zone teams have shown more proclivity for power run game, and I think that's Rob Jones's bread and butter. It also, to me, speaks to the vision of the interior positions. Aaron Brewer is as light as they come, but that's a direct correlation to the fact that he's the twitchiest, freakiest mover at the position. And so when you sacrifice a little bit of size at the center position, like with Connor Williams, like with Aaron Brewer, it makes sense to get some bigger guards like Rob Hunt was, like Rob Jones is, like Isaiah Wynn was, right? Makes sense across the board. Jake Bailey didn't touch on that signing. He's back. And of course, we lost some players as well, but like, holy drama queens out there, man. Like, darkest Monday in Dolphins history, as I'm going to go ahead and pivot now to angry mode. Like, FOH, man, get the F out of here. What are you, TMZ? I don't understand that. Like, what surprise happened to start the legal tampering period that you weren't prepared for? Van Ginkle? Okay, they went and used that money on a three-down coverage linebacker, which is exactly what you tried to make Andrew Van Ginkle last August. I don't get it, man. Let's go ahead and take a break right there, come back on the other side and get into that. I have some thoughts, and we'll talk about the players that the Dolphins reportedly will lose as well, talk about comp formulas and all that, much, much more here next on the Drive Time Podcast. Your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. All right, so the darkest Monday in Dolphins history is what I saw some headlines calling this. Yeah, man, because Brandon Jones reportedly, all these reportedly, goes to Denver, Van Ginkle to Minnesota, and Raekwon Davis, a two-year, $14 million deal to go to the Indianapolis Colts. Him and Brandon Jones got paid, and good for those guys. That was a lot more than the projected value of their contracts they would get this offseason. So they both depart to Denver and Indianapolis alike. And then the two mega splashes of the day outside of the quarterback in Atlanta were Christian Wilkins of the Raiders and Robert Hunt to the Panthers. And both of those deals were market setters, top of the line per reports, right? And if you look at the compensatory formula per the reported figures, like, you know, we'll see what this turns out to be because it's never exact. And you guys might recall Juwan James was supposed to give us a comp pick back in the day, but he got hurt and missed the entire year. So there are certain things that have to be satisfied to get those picks. But Nick Corte, who does a great job of this, go check out his work. He's kind of like Kent Lee Platt for the RAS or Brad Spielberger for contract projections. Just the very best. And a Ted Williams type of batting average. Comparatively, you know, he hits like 400. And, you know, not saying 400 is good for this, but like the very best of all time. I really trust his work there. So according to him, the Van Ginkle contract would wash out the Brooks contract, the Jones contract would wash out the Brewer contract, and then Jonnu and Barrett have no comp impact, and that sets the Dolphins up for a pair of top 100 picks for Wilkins and for Hunt, provided we do not further imbalance that comp formula any further. And as I edit this recording on Wednesday morning to include Raekwon Davis, which now means Miami gets right back on the board with a sixth-round pick, with the current state of things, I'll go ahead and update this at the end of the podcast if I have to, if somebody gets signed here in the next 6 hours before the podcast comes out at 4 o'clock for you guys tonight on Wednesday. But with Raekwon now off the board and into the books, so a third round pick for Wilkins, third round pick for Hunt, and sixth round pick for Raekwon Davis. And of course, Jordan Poyer did not impact the comp formula at all. So Miami making big moves in the draft and free agency in this free agency period. But there's also a million guys out there that were cut that you can still shop from without impacting your formula. Mr. Krabs. That's also the waiting game, right? Which also comes with the extra cash in hand for the Xavier Howard cut, eventually coming down the pike here, which kicks in an available chunk of money post June 1. And at that time, you no longer impact your compensatory formula. And we've seen a guy like, again, Jadeveon Clowney sign post this date often. He signed with Baltimore last August, for instance. That's become a little more prominent lately, and Miami could explore that avenue to keep this whole train rolling towards getting more players, getting your roster deeper and more expansive with future draft picks to replace those guys and get yourself more core pieces, hopefully, in the draft down the line. There's a vision here, right? Crazy. I know some of you guys don't see it that way, but I promise you there is. One last bit of good news, again, per reports, was that the Dolphins did some conversions of contracts across the roster to get themselves in position, and Teron Armstead and the team agreed to an adjusted contract, so he'll be back. He's not going to retire, and so you get some available money there for all that. And to be perfectly honest with you guys, I'm not going to break it down because those are not the details that we, you know, see made privy in the public, and I don't care to speculate on things I'm not acutely aware of. And if I may, for a moment, take the soapbox here and give you guys a quick speech. First off, what we talk about on the Friday podcast or Monday, the shopping list, right? Where the best buys in free agency tend to come from. I mean, I know we have the vocal minority on Twitter that thinks that we're the worst run team in the NFL and all that stuff. But the team that paid a right guard 5 years, $100 million, can I tell you about some of their other dealings they've done? In turning down multiple first-round draft picks for Brian Burns and then later trading him for a second-round pick. The move up for Bryce Young, the eventual deal of Brian Burns and Christian McCaffrey as well. Here is the collective haul the Panthers have acquired since the last 2 years. They gave away the first pick in the draft this year, probably Caleb Williams. They gave away Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, and first-round picks in 23, in 24, and 25, and a second-round pick in 23. That's a lot, right? That's like a lot more than the Laremy Tunsil deal. In exchange, they got Bryce Young, 1 year of Brian Burns, DJ Johnson, an outside linebacker, and 2 fifth-round draft picks. That is who you are competing with. You're competing with a team that just told you they're going to have Gardner Minshew, don't get me wrong, go Cougs, but Gardner Minshew compete with Aiden O'Connell for the starting quarterback job, which, you know, again, go Cougs, but hardly a needle mover, right? So we're square, right? Plus, we talked about positional priorities. Look, Austin Jackson's done. Tua Tagovailoa going to get done. And eventually we'll see Waddle and Phillips get done. And the conversion on Ramsey's deal makes him a very good candidate for an extension down the road. So that's weird. Weird that they prioritize quarterback, receiver, offensive tackle, edge, and cornerback, literally the 5 premium positions in the National Football League, and let tier 3 positions of guard and defensive tackle walk. That's weird. And those best buys, it's all about how the market dictates, right? Like on Monday, we saw the running back market go nanners, and that continued on Tuesday as well. And that's because years of depressing the market has made that pendulum swing just a little bit, where now it's a little bit more attractive to teams again. So what do the Dolphins do but go out and get 2 linebackers, a tight end, and a center, 3 positions that don't break the bank on this 3 cents on the dollar market going crazy right now? I mean, Gabe Davis just got $13 million per year from Jacksonville, per reports. And 2 years ago, after they gave Christian Kirk 17 and Zay Jones 11 and traded a second-round draft pick for Calvin Ridley, like, those are the GMs that you should be diverting your anger towards, right? That Davis deal slots him as the 23rd highest paid receiver annually per SpoTrack. It puts him ahead of DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Gallup, Jacoby Myers, Tyler Boyd. You get it. Some real proven players in the NFL. 23 highest APY for last year's 49th highest yardage total among all pass catchers and 93rd in catches. I don't want to be in that business. I'm not saying that to disparage Davis, just illustrating how inflation works on day one of free agency. It's not good to be a heavy spender in that round, because if you have cap space, it means you probably don't have players. When you're with cap space, you can buy good players like Tyreek Hill, right? I would have thought we had learned this by now, but I mean, who knows more than the Dolphins fans, the Mike Wallace and Ndamukong Suh, Philip Wheeler and Danelle Ellerbe? When has being top spenders on day one ever worked out for anybody? The teams that willy-nilly cash probably don't have a ton of wins this last year, right? I mean, we lost our guys to an 8-win team and a 2-win team. My last soapbox thing here is about remembering history, because in the first few hours, I know the constant tweets from people didn't help, but you thought we'd started the season 0-8 with the sky falling. That whole approach. Like, we were 3 hours into it, and I saw the tweets. Then we go out there and we land 3 major contributors. It reminded me of 2 years ago when everybody lost their mind that Lyle Collins signed ahead to the Bengals ahead of our move for Teron Armstead. Then literally the next day, we get the top NFL.com free agent, not offensive line, the top free agent in general in Teron Armstead. And it goes deeper. Remember the panic about the offensive line last year, how we couldn't handle the Chargers without T-set on opening day. and our quarterback throws for 466, and we score 34 points, win the game, or 36 points. I don't know. This whole finality approach in the month of March makes no sense to me. Ask the Texans, the Packers, the Bucks. What did their press clippings say, you know, this time last year? 2-15 for the Bucks. They won the division and won a playoff game. It just blows me away how we get surprises every single year in this league, like several of them, and we still see this definitive talk in March. It blows my mind. All right, back to it here. So last year, this team, I did this research project because I was really curious to see about some losses we had and what it looked like here, because I keep seeing like, oh, they can't win games without these two players. We were missing two critical players every game last year, the whole season. We had injury concerns pretty much every single week. Let's go ahead and actually do this with a scientific measure, and we'll use the collective measure of players lost, which will use approximate value, a stat from Pro Football Reference that essentially assigns each player with a number, kind of like wins above replacement, the WAR stat in baseball. They use this to kind of measure a player's value. So collectively, Wilkins, Hunt, Gink, and Jones had a collective AV of 22 last year. That was 4 more than Tyreek Hill, 5 more than Tua, 18 and 17 respectively. For posterity, the MVP, Lamar Jackson, was 19. Josh Allen was 18. We calibrated on that? Okay, cool. So let's go week by week here and look at just how much AV was off the roster because of injuries last season. Week 1, 25 approximate value was absent, won that game. Week 2, 23, won that game. Week 3, 17 AV absent, won that game. In week 5 was our best game from an injury standpoint all year. Besides week 13, actually. 13 approximate value absent, won that game. Week 6, a bunch more injuries. 21 AV missing to injury, won that game. Week 8, 29, a season high approximate value on the sideline, won that game. Week 11, 17 approximate value missing, won that game. In week 12, we had 18 missing and won that game. And the Commanders game was actually our healthiest game all year long, missing just 8 AV. We had a blowout demolition victory in that game. Week 15 against the Jets, a season-high 30 approximate value missing, won that game 30-0. In week 16, you were missing 17 AV and won that game. So that's 5 wins with more AV lost due to injury than what the Dolphins just lost in free agency this week. On average, over the 11 wins, the Dolphins were down an average of 19.8 approximate value. Round up, call it 20, which is higher than the AV if you take Brandon Jones, who was a part-time third safety who didn't play well last year, out of the equation. This is why I just can't fathom this whole window is closed, doomed to the max of 8 or 9 wins. I just don't get it. So what the Dolphins did do on Monday was you lost 3 starters, but just like we talked about with trading out more high-paid players for more quantity of players, you added 5 starters. And you add Raekwon Davis to that mix as a rotational guy. It's not a starter, but you're down, you know, 5 players. 3 of them were starters. 2 were kind of rotational impact players, a little bit, I guess. But in pivoting from there, like, the guys the Dolphins brought in are barely more expensive than Christian Wilkins. On balance, on total, the Dolphins saw over $70 million in APY go out the door and ended up spending like 34 of their own and got more players out of it. 5 starters compared to 5 players, but really it's 3 starters, right? And Miami, you know, Shaq Barrett, probably not a starter, but in the beginning he will be because you have to make up for the time lost from the pass rushers that you might have injured to start the season. But you're swapping out big-time contracts for more players, more depth, more competitive balance across the roster. And the Dolphins are shifting gears in the way they do things, which you should admire as a fan because approaches in this league can become so rigid. And if we've learned anything about the current Dolphins leadership is they understand when to push the gas and when to go into the pits for a different set of tires, so to speak. Again, Trent Baalke pushed money to Gabe Davis and like they hit the gas and said, forget the future. They stretch this thing out. Let's go ahead and Mike Tannenbaum our way down this thing. And like, man, we've still got the core at the key spots. As we previously discussed, the too long didn't read version is this. For what Wilkins got from the Raiders, Miami got Brewer, Jonnu, Shaq, and Brooks. Give or take a few million. But that wasn't at the point of what I mentioned last week and what we just covered. We still have the core intact. The top 10 impact players in the roster, I would put up against anybody in the National Football League. And we stretched our depth even better with more players at the sacrifice of a couple of big-time players. And guess what? There's potential for these guys to become just that, very much so. Like, I think Jordan Brooks could become that. I've always been a proponent of putting your money on offense. Have the top-ranked offense. Then if you get takeaways and red zone stops, you can win a Super Bowl. We're seeing them get more players at a reduced cost, and I admire the approach. It's what I wanted to do going into this. Build that defense to sustain injuries while you intend to return another top-ranked offense. And for that defense, they took a hit early on, but maybe Coach Weaver has a vision of what he wants it to look like, right? But can we see what happens next before getting ahead of ourselves? I wrote this before, a few of these moves. Like, again, come on, Shaq Barrett. So filling out these needs in short order. But from there on, what if we take our pick of the litter at safety and we sign an Arik Armstead, bring back Connor Williams, or go grab Laken Tomlinson? Like, this is all still well within the realm of possibilities. And just remember, it's not even over until, like, freaking August, right? In that vacuum, the comp formula would tell you get a third for Christian and a third for Robert Hunt, my apologies. And, you know, those are both top 100 picks in 2025, and then the other draft pick kind of fell off because of the additional signings. But you could go into the draft with, like, your roster pretty well intact. You would still need, you know, a couple of spots here and there. But, man, like, a depth chart of this going into the draft: Tua, White, Achan, Mostert, Brooks, Ingold, Tyreek, Waddle. I put Curtis Samuel in there as a signing, maybe. River Craycraft, Jonnu Smith, Durham Smythe, Julian Hill. Your tackles: Armstead, Jackson, Lamb, Brewer, Tomlinson, Eichenberg, Jones on the interior, Armstead, Sealer, Hand, Phillips, Chubb, Barrett, Brooks, Long, Walker, Tindall, Ramsey, Smith, Kohu, Needham, Bonner. And then at safety, who knows what happens next? But right now, Holland, Poyer, Campbell, maybe Elliott returns. Like, you can go into the draft with that roster, and that's a top 10 roster right there. Plus, next year, having 2/3, 2/5, and 2/6. And something else, man, the value of these draft picks with the salary cap rising, like, look at these contracts going nuts. So I like the idea of having these future draft picks, getting bargain type of free agent additions that can impact your team, giving yourself more quantity of good players. Let's go, baby. There's a vision, there's a thought, and I'm excited about it. Let's go ahead and take our last break right there, come back on the other side, and see what happened across the National Football League. That's next. Drive Time Podcast. Your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Since the new league year has officially begun with the dropping of this podcast, I'm going to go ahead and jump on the mic here at 1:51. Eastern time, so about 2 hours and 9 minutes ahead of the new league year, and take the chance that no more massive signings happen between now and 4 o'clock, so the podcast can be ready and produced and cut and ready for you guys right at 4 o'clock. Let's go ahead and go down the list of NFL signings, talk about this position by position, where I think some teams got it right, where it maybe not that way, and just a general look at the teams here in free agency. Go ahead and cue the music, and let's go ahead and jump into the quarterback position that starts at the top with Kirk Cousins. I think that that makes the Falcons the obvious, immediate, clear favorite in the NFC South, and I keep seeing these takes about how it's not some ready-made team that he's stepping into. That may be accurate in some sense, but I do know that Falcons offensive line can get push. I know they have a fantastic running game and multiple backs that can tote the rock for big yardage and touchdowns and be productive. And I love their eligibles they have in the receiving department, tight ends and wide receivers now, with Drake London, with Kyle Pitts, with Bijan Robinson as a running back that can catch the football. They are just stacked across the board there. And the defense, like last year, we saw them in camp, and I was like, that's a pretty good-looking defense right there. Might not be ready right now to compete, but they'll get better as they go along. So I think the Falcons have made some big moves, especially at the quarterback position in that division that has really no quarterbacks besides he and Baker right now to speak of. You know, Derek Carr and Bryce Young had terrible years last year, so I think that the Falcons are the sure favorite right there. Other quarterback news, look, here's another part for you. So Sam Darnold, I heard this podcast that talked about how all these tape heads that think that Darnold's going to be a great fit somewhere, when he finally gets a chance, and I was referred to like Nate Tice, Bill Barnwell put in that group for some reason. Daniel Jeremiah was the one that really kind of piques my interest. But talking about all these people that love Sam Darnold, and that just makes so much sense for me in the sense that, like, these are the guys that don't like Tua Tagovailoa because of physical talent, right? But how about we watch what they do on the football field and not worry about big arm throw ball far, right? So that one, good luck in Minnesota with that. Some backups: Taylor to the Jets. So we're not going to have Zach Wilson this year. Tyrod Taylor, I should say. Drew Lock to the Giants. I think he's their best quarterback right now, over Daniel Jones. Winston goes to the Browns, and Mariota back to the Commanders. No Justin Fields movement just yet. That's an interesting part of the free agency so far. Running back Derrick Henry to the Ravens just makes so much sense. He's going to freaking feast in that offense. I mean, all the running backs have over the years, and he's by far the best of that group. Same story with Saquon Barkley for the Philadelphia Eagles. I like those moves, but Pollard to the Titans, Swift to the Bears, Jacobs to the Packers, Jones to the Vikings, like, none of those move the needle for me. And those were early moves in free agency that really kind of got things going. But you complain about contracts that your team gives out, but it could be, you know, massive early running back contracts. Receivers, not a lot of movement here. This class was pretty low coming in. Gabe Davis to the Jaguars, that was $13 million per year. Okay. Darnell Mooney is another new receiver to the Falcons there for Kirk Cousins, and then Deontay Johnson to the Panthers. But, man, if his effort level is bad in Pittsburgh, whew, buddy, going there, I don't know. Colby Parkinson went to the Rams, left the Seahawks, a division rival move there. Irv Smith to the Chiefs. Not a lot of movement on the offensive line that I noted here of notable names, I should say. Morgan Moses got traded to the Jets from the Ravens, so they finally have a decent tackle in the building now. Lloyd Cushenberry to the Titans. Tyler Biotis to the Commanders. That was a contract that I was hoping would not come this way, and we did not go that way. The Jets also added John Simpson to their line, so this is what I'm talking about, guys. They went out and spent money on Morgan Moses and John Simpson. Those are their offensive line solutions for an O-line that was atrocious last year. It'll be better, but probably not much. Jonah Jackson to the Rams, Robert Hunt to the Panthers, John Runyon to the Giants. Defensive tackles, we know about Wilkins to the Raiders. Javon Kinlaw goes to the Jets. He was a guy that I was curious to buy low on, but looks like he'll go back to Robert Saleh, his previous DC there in San Francisco, and try to resurrect his career that way. The Jets do get Leaky Fotu to their defensive tackle room, but they've also lost Bryce Huff, Quentin Jefferson, Al Woods, and the other guy, I forget his name. Solomon Thomas. Sorry, Jesus. Moving on here to the DNs and the Texans, man. The Texans are getting busy right now, and they'll be a popular pick next year. We'll see how that works out for them. But they did say goodbye to Jonathan Greenard, who went off to the Vikings to join Andrew Van Ginkle in that Brian Flores pass rush there. But they get DeNico Autry, who I think is a better player, and Danielle Hunter, who's a star defensive end pass rush from this league. Look out for the Texans next year. Dorrance Armstrong to the Commanders. Dan Quinn gets his guy there. Leo Williams signs his contract extension with the Seahawks after getting traded there. Brian Burns to the Giants is a big ad for them. We'll see if the Giants can finally start winning some football games this year, but probably have to, like I said, go to Drew Lock if you want to do that. Marcus Davenport liked him for a low risk defensive end signing. He goes to the Lions. Leonard Floyd to the Niners, and then the linebacker position. Let's see what we've got here. Sione Takitaki to the Patriots, Jordan Hicks to the Browns, Azeez Al-Shaair to the Texans. Man, they're getting stout up the middle. Frankie Louvu goes to the Commanders as well. Kenneth Murray to the Titans. That was their first signing. And Pollard. Okay. Gink to the Vikings, Eric Kendricks to the 49ers, Josie Jewell to the Panthers. Frankie Louvu to the Commanders is the one that I like the most there, but and Gink to the Vikings as well, but that's not really a list to go crazy about. Let's finish up with the DBs here. Lonnie Johnson to the Texans, Carlton Davis to the Lions, Chidobe Awuzie to the Titans, and Sean Murphy-Bunton to the Cardinals, Brandon Jones to the Broncos, Darnell Savage to the Jaguars, Geno Stone to the Bengals, and Xavier McKinney to the Packers. So, yeah, man, there's a lot going on in the football world right now, and with the Miami Dolphins, obviously, and in the NFL. I think that when you look at the Dolphins' needs, I think the two guard positions is where you point to right now, because we filled the center spot out. We have one safety. We got the pass rusher we needed, the tight end we needed. So looking right now, a third receiver would be a nice piece there. A couple of guards would be nice to find as well. A couple of defensive tackles are my two areas of focus. And I do believe Deshaun Elliott should be a guy they look at to bring back. So there you go. Plenty of football right there for you. We'll come back on Friday for another podcast here. We're also going to have free agent interviews with all the guys. So that's the plan right now anyway. This sign here coming up on Drive Time. John U. Smith is in the can. Great interview with him. So we'll talk about that and much, much more as we go along here. But in the meantime, you all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, all that stuff. Follow on social. Check out the Fish Tank podcast. Check out the YouTube channel. And of course, last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Caroline and Cameron, Daddy, just going home.